Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take something you think you know, a simple toy, a cultural touchstone, and we kind of crack it open.
And inside, you find a surprising mix of intense history, high-stakes finance, and some really cutting-edge technology.
Exactly. And today, we are deep diving into the Tamagotchi. You know, the handheld digital pet that captivated, confused, and let's be honest, probably emotionally scarred an entire generation.
It's the perfect subject because it's so easy to just dismiss it as, you know, pure 90s nostalgia.
Yeah.
But a Tamagotchi is actually this powerful 30-year case study in business paradox and persistent technological evolution.
Right.
So our mission today is to really unpack the source material covering its origin, its ruthless care mechanics, and its wild leap from basic pixels to being a fully Wi-Fi connected device.
And when we talk about evolution and impact, I mean, we are talking serious numbers here. This little egg, marketed by Bandai since 1996, has now sold over 98 million units worldwide as of 2025.
98 million. That is nearly 100 million people who have at some point felt that intense, guilt-fueled pang of a chirping plastic device demanding their attention.
It's an astonishing number, especially when you consider its very specific, almost accidental origin.
It really is.
Okay, so let's unpack this. We have to start with the conceptual egg. The invention is credited to two people, Akihiro Yokoi of a company called Weezy and Aki Maita from Bandai.
Right, and the concept was simple. Simulate pet ownership without the fiscal burden. But the design choices were intentionally very specific.
And what's fascinating here is that the final pixel art, the look that we all remember, that wasn't the starting point.
No, not at all. The original characters were first drawn in what's called a Heda Uma style.
Heda Uma. What does that translate to?
It's roughly bad but good.
Okay.
It's a deliberately awkward or like unskilled drawing style that was trending in Japanese teen magazines at the time. So Bandai recognized that using this aesthetic and then converting it to simple pixel art gave the early Tamagotchi characters this unique, almost endearingly rough look.
So it felt like it belonged to youth culture, not some glossy corporate product.
Exactly. It had an identity that was completely distinct from, say, the polished look of Nintendo characters.
That makes a lot of sense. And the name itself is a fantastic combination. It comes from Tamago,
which means egg in Japanese.
And Wachi, which is the anglicized Japanese pronunciation of watch.
Yes. And that watch element is really key to the initial concept. The design was originally intended to be a wrist-worn device.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so even though the final product became that ubiquitous keychain, the name stuck. It solidified its place as a pet that demanded constant time and attention, just like a wristwatch.
And their achievement was recognized in this truly unique way in 1997. They received the satirical Ig Nobel Prize for Economics.
They did. They were dubbed the father and mother of Tamagotchi for the whole phenomenon they created.
They certainly created an economy, but one that held a massive financial surprise for Bandai.
Oh, a huge surprise. The toy launched in Japan in November 1996, and it was initially marketed exclusively to teenage girls.
But that did not last long.
No, the appeal just broke that container immediately. It exploded into a global toy phenomenon in 1997. During that original run, the craze drove sales of 40 million units worldwide.
40 million, including 12 million in just the U.S. and Canada. The sources describe the demand as so intense that Bandai employees were actually banned from carrying bags that showed the logo.
Just for fear of theft or being mobbed.
Incredible.
The sheer volume of sales is astonishing, but here's where that business paradox kicks in. The success story has a very, very sharp financial turn. Bandai completely miscalculated the fad's staying power, and they overproduced units on an enormous scale.
Wait, hold on. If they sold 40 million units in a single run, how does that possibly translate into a financial disaster? Doesn't the success just mitigate that risk?
You'd think so, but it didn't. The company suffered from internal miscommunication and just severe demand instability. The sources show that by 1998, when the craze just evaporated, Bandai was left holding millions of unsold toys.
And that resulted in?
A staggering 6 billion yen financial loss.
6 billion yen.
All stemming from a toy that was one of the biggest hits of the decade.
That is the ultimate cautionary tale in managing explosive novelty. The company was so successful, but they were almost bankrupted by the speed of their own success.
And that failure forced Bandai to recognize that the core value of Tamagotchi wasn't just sales volume. It was the intense, non-optional customer commitment driven by the core mechanics.
Which brings us right back to that original design philosophy.
Exactly.
The backstory is that Tamagotchis are a small alien species that deposited an egg on Earth, and you, the player, must raise it through the baby, child, teenager, and adult stages.
And the goal, the thing that rewarded all that relentless care, was that the final adult character depended entirely on the quality of your care. Better care, supposedly, results in a creature that's smarter, happier, and, well, requires less attention later on.
And that required constant care is the genius and the cruelty of the whole design.
Yeah.
You had to monitor three essential needs. You have the standard ones, the hunger meter.
Filled with meals and snacks.
And the happy meter, which you could boost with mini games and, well, more snacks.
But then you had the third one, which always struck me as the most psychologically interesting, the training meter.
Yes.
This is where the emotional manipulation truly began. The training meter was about discipline. You didn't fill it by teaching it tricks. You filled it by scolding the creature when it was behaving badly.
And behaving badly just meant what? That it was calling for attention.
Pretty much. It would chime even though its hunger and happy meters were full, or if it refused to eat its food.
So scolding wasn't a positive training exercise. It was the discipline button you pressed when your pet was just being needy.
It creates instant guilt. You're forced to engage in that moment of discipline, which reinforces the feeling of being a parent who has to manage every tiny behavioral nuance.
And we haven't even mentioned hygiene.
Oh, right. The pet leaves droppings, and if you fail to clean them up, it gets sick, which was symbolized by that dreaded skull icon.
The clock was always ticking, and neglect brought swift, terrifying consequences. This brings us to the most controversial element that really defined the era. Pet death.
Right. Why was the failure state so immediate and visceral? I mean, poor care in those early versions could genuinely cause the pet to die in less than half a day.
Less than half a day. And it wasn't just neglect. It could happen from sickness, old age, or in some later versions, even predators.
And the visualization of this tragedy varied, which is telling about cultural perspectives on death. The Japanese releases showed a ghost rising from the screen and a headstone.
Whereas the English versions featured a little angel, which I guess was meant to soften the blow slightly.
But regardless of the graphic, the distress was immense. Schools all over the world banned the toy because of classroom disruption. The sheer emotional toll it took on kids was huge.
There are even documented reports of teenagers sending the devices to graveyards for burial. That intense, non-optional emotional connection the toy forced on you was instantaneous and so demanding.
It's amazing how much social and emotional weight was carried by an 8-bit black and white screen. But the Tamagotchi didn't die out with the 90s fad. It came back.
And this time, it was technologically ambitious.
Bandai, having stabilized after that 6 billion yen fiasco, brought the toys back cautiously in 2004 with really subdued advertising.
Hmm.
This was the Tamagotchi Connection, also known as Tamagotchi Plus.
And the name change is significant. It signals the leap from an isolated keychain to a network device. The Connection introduced RDA technology.
RDA, yeah. It stands for Infrared Data Association. Essentially, it's a low-power, short-range infrared connection.
So you had to line up the sensors on two different Tamagotchis perfectly.
You did. But once you connected, your pets could form friendships, play games together, and most importantly, make babies.
That immediately changes the whole game. It's no longer a solitary duty. It's a digital community.
Exactly. And this paved the way for complex family lines. While marriage was featured in some very early versions using physical prongs, models like Tamagotchi Sum, MX, and Tamagotchi, on introduced true gene mixing.
So it wasn't just marrying two pixels and getting a random baby.
No, it became like digital crossbreeding. The offspring would inherit specific visual and personality features from both parents. Your family tree genuinely mattered now.
If your pet married a pet with a specific ear shape or antenna, your baby would share those characteristics.
Precisely. The concept of lineage became central to the gameplay loop.
And the leap from infrared to the modern era is astonishingly rapid. We saw the first color screen in Japan, only in 2008, the Plus color.
And Bandai also expanded the digital world by supporting online apps like Tamatown in the mid-2000s.
Which is a crucial technical bridge, right? Because these devices didn't have Wi-Fi. So how did they participate in an online town?
Players would use alphanumeric codes generated by the toy itself to log into the website's flash game environment, Tamatown. They could play mini games on the computer to earn gachi points. And then, here's the clever part, the website would generate a return code.
and you'd have to input that code back into your physical device to transfer the currency and items you earned online.
It was incredibly complex for a digital pet. You're essentially using the physical device as a password generator and a digital wallet, exchanging data through manual input.
It's a very early, clunky version of integrating a real-world toy with a digital ecosystem. But the modern era, that completely blows that out of the water. We move from codes to cameras.
Right. The Tamagotchi Pix, released in 2021, had a built-in camera. This enabled augmented reality pictures where you could take a photo of yourself with your Tamagotchi overlaid on the screen.
And in the same year, they also introduced the Tamagotchi Smarta device housed in a smartwatch form factor, though that was only available in Japan at first.
But the real technological giant leap, the moment that Tamagotchi truly became a 21st century wearable, came in 2023 with the Tamagotchi Uni.
This was the first model with Wi-Fi.
That changes everything. It's no longer just linked to a second device or an external website. It's a fully networked toy.
So it can connect to an online environment, the Tamiverse.
Correct. Players from around the world can interact, and Bandai now supports downloadable content DLC expansion packs to add new items, characters, and environments directly to the physical device.
It went from a tiny toy that required you to set the clock to pause it to a Wi-Fi-enabled wearable that receives digital expansion packs.
That journey from Hitauma pixels to a networked metaverse device is stunning. And it just underscores why the Tamagotchi has maintained such an enduring legacy.
It wasn't just a hit, it founded a genre. Its global popularity led directly to the spawning of the entire virtual pet genre.
It did. It generated imitators like Tiger and Hasbro's Gigapet almost immediately.
And even its competitors acknowledged its profound influence. I love this quote from Shigeru Miyamoto, the creator of Mario 64. He pointed out that while everyone was focused on the spectacular 3D graphics of his game, they were overshadowed by the massive hit that was the Tamagotchi.
He said it was a tiny keychain boasting pictures made up of no more than 10 or 20 dots.
And he joked that the massively expensive, graphically superior Mario 64 had lost to the Tamagotchi in terms of cultural saturation.
That anecdote perfectly captures the magic. The emotional investment completely trumped the graphical fidelity, and that nostalgia loop is clearly working overtime. The recent revival has seen global sales double between 2022 and 2023.
Driven by both millennials wanting to revisit their childhood and a completely new young audience experiencing it for the first time.
And the ultimate recognition for this little 8-bit egg happened just recently. In 2025.
It did. The Tamagotchi was inducted into the Strong National Museum of Play's World Video Game Hall of Fame.
Yep. And the museum highlighted its legacy, noting that it provided a respite from competition and fighting games and promoted feelings of connection, caring, and customization.
So if we look back at this whole deep dive, the journey is just mind-boggling. From a conceptual wristwatch toy marketed exclusively to Japanese teenage girls, that accidentally drove Bandai into a 6 billion yen financial loss.
To a Wi-Fi-enabled wearable metaverse device and an official Hall of Fame inductee.
Absolutely. The data shows the original design was an exercise in relentless, you know, guilt-fueled duty, punishing players, sometimes with death in less than half a day, for inadequate care.
Yet its enduring legacy, according to the Strong Museum, is that it fostered connection and caring. Which brings up an important question for you to mull over.
Go on.
How much of the Tamagotchi's lasting success lies not in its sophisticated modern digital features, but precisely in that intense, non-negotiable emotional obligation it forced upon the player? What other gaming phenomenon relies so heavily on the player's fear of failure to generate such lasting affection and cultural